UK Wine Show, show number 176. Barolo Wines with Enrico Rovetto. G'day, welcome to the UK Wine Show. It's show number 176 for the 2nd of October, 2009. My name's Chris Scott, and on this week's show, we're talking with Enrico Rovetto. We talk with Enrico about his reds from Barolo, and we know that means Nebbiolo grape. So we find out a wee bit about how the Nebbiolo grape grows in Barolo. It's been a pretty quiet week for me. I've spent a lot of time this week and last week code cutting. That's writing computer code for my website. Whoa! I know how exciting that can be. So many sunny days recently and so much code to write. But very shortly, you're going to start to see some exciting new content being published on our site. It's not new content, it's just new access to content. Stuff that we've been doing, but we haven't put on our site because we haven't been able to. So, I'll give you more about that later on when it comes out. I know it's a bit of a tease, but these things happen. So, let's crack on with this week's show. In the spotlight, we're going to be looking at our wine poll. How many bottles do you regularly purchase when shopping for wine? And for a change, I've added a couple of new topics to our mystery regions and grape varieties. So, now we're going to have a mystery producer and also a mystery personality. We'll see how this goes anyway. The first one is our mystery personality. So let's start with, he's a fantastically good-looking guy who does a weekly podcast called The UK Wine Show. Any ideas? No, it's not me. No, I'm just kidding, actually. We do have a mystery person this week, though. And so here's your first clue. Okay, so our famous wine person was born in the USSR in what's now called Belarus. He was born in 1975. He moved to New York when he was 3 and now is a wine retailer in New York. He's one of America's most influential critics and was included in Decanter's 2009 power list of influential people. I'll give you some more of the clues after the news, which is coming up next with, you know who, Jane.
Thanks, Chris. It's the bubbles that give champagne its flavour. That's according to research that confirms the long-held view that champagnes with a fine and persistent mousse, or a stream of bubbles, are of higher quality. In research at the University of Reims, it's been found that the bubbles can contain up to 30 times more flavour than the wine itself, and that they have a very different chemical fingerprint. The mousse acts as a flavour delivery system, with the rising and collapsing bubbles releasing aroma compounds in a continuous cycle. Scientists likened the effect to a paternoster lift for bubbles instead of people. The lift moves in a loop without stopping for people to get on and off at any level they like.
Bubbles come from sparkling wines when the pressure decreases, allowing the gases, that's carbon dioxide, that are dissolved in the wine to go back into a gas format. It is possible that bubbles will pick up flavour compounds and help to push them up out of the glass as the bubbles erupt from the fizz. If they pick up flavour as they rise, then those long fluted champagne glasses are ideal. And also, if you believe what Riedel says about the narrow opening keeping the wine from hitting the side of your mouth, which will give it the effect of not having as much acidity, it could be another reason for having those long flutes. Personally, I think they look nicer in the flute than the Marie Antoinette breast-shaped glass. And don't forget that while the story is about champagne, it's just as relevant for things like cava and other fizzes of the world. What's next, Jane?
Well, a new computer wine game is being launched in the United States next month, where players can fight it out to become wealthy wine barons. Wine Tycoon allows players to create vineyards in 10 of France's most prestigious wine regions, including Bordeaux, Burgundy and Champagne. Players must build a winery, plant and maintain their vines, and hire staff for the harvest, and finally produce up to 50 wines from a choice of over 40 grape varieties. The game has two levels, career and free play, and comes with a wine encyclopedia with a glossary of wine terms, grape varieties and wine regions. It's being produced by Got Game Limited and will retail at $19.99.
Sounds like a great game. When it comes out, I'll give it a go and let you guys know. What's the last news item, Jane?
The UK government is planning to allow sample measures of wine to be served in bars and restaurants by deregulating wine measures under 75 mil. Under the current law, wine can only be sold in measures of 125ml, 175ml and multiples of these, for example 250ml. But the wine trade has been lobbying the National Measures Office for smaller measures to assist with sampling and tasting sessions. Under the new proposals, beer will also be available as two-thirds of a pint, nicknamed a toother, and port will be in smaller sizes of 50ml and 70ml. That's it from me this week, but don't forget, as always, to visit our website 3050.co.uk, where you can read these stories in full.
Cheers, Jane. The measure is a tricky one. On the positive side, it will allow people to sample more wine without having to drink a whole glass. And it could also encourage restaurants to offer smaller glasses so that you can have a different wine with each course of your meal and not have to worry about drinking half a bottle of wine if that's not your cup of tea. But on the negative side, 125ml is a fairly small measure already, and restaurants and bars already don't like serving those because they're just not as profitable as they'd like. Also, it may allow some wine merchants who currently offer free sampling because they can't charge for it to start charging for their samples. So it's a tricky one, and it's the basis of this month's poll, which you can have your say by going to our website 3050.co.uk. Click on podcast, and it's on the right-hand side of the podcast page. In fact, it's on quite a few of the pages, so have we stroll around while you're there, find out about our wine tasting business, which funds this podcast. In fact, this leads on nicely to our spotlight, which is the results from last month's poll. Okay, let's have a look at this week's poll. I do promise to finish up on low-alcohol wines and the tools for removing alcohol and wine, but we've got the poll this week, and next week we've got a book review as well, so it won't be for a couple of weeks. But this week's poll, we're looking at the results from our question, how many bottles of wine do you regularly purchase when shopping for wine? So the answers were 59% said 1 to 2 bottles, 24% said 3 to 4 bottles, 8% said 6 bottles, and 8% also said 12 plus bottles. As you can imagine, most people buy wine on the spur of the moment, with 59% of people buying 1 to 2 bottles at a time. In fact, most people, 84% of our poll, buy less than 4 bottles at a time. Now, I think this is a shame, because if you're buying 1 to 4 bottles, then you're probably buying them from a supermarket or the high street. That's not a bad place to buy wine, particularly if you're budget-focused, but you do get an exceedingly limited terms of choice. You look at the street and you go, wow, look at that, so many Cabernet Sauvignons from Chile. Wow, which one to choose from? But there's a huge range of wines out there, and you're not likely to see wines like Vinsanto and Threshers, or really anything other than the big main brands. Buying wine on the high street is a bit like renting a DVD from Blockbusters. Sure, you're going to get some latest and greatest, and you're going to get a good deal as well on price, but you're not going to get some art house movie, or in wine's case, something unusual. For true experimentation, you need to get off the high street and tend to buy wines in cases of 12 or more off the internet. There are very few small independents, and looking around some of the high streets where I live, some of the local wine merchants are closing down, which is a shame, but that's the recession. So the internet does seem to be booming in terms of being able to buy unusual wines. Let's face it, if you're spending £5 on an Aussie Shiraz, it's going to taste very similar to another £5 Aussie Shiraz. So for variety and experimentation, I suggest buying mixed cases of 12. That's the way to go. Now, selling cases of wine is what our mystery person does. So let's have the next set of clues, and it should give it away for most of you guys. Our mystery person is an outspoken critic of wine scores, but in his video podcast, he admits that this is a bit hypocritical as he scores his wines out of 100. In March 2009, he signed a 10-book deal with Harper Studios for a whopping $1 million. And his first book is due to be released in October 2009. Titled Crush It, Now is the Time to Cash In on Your Passion, it is his video podcasts and the Thunder Show, also known as Wine Library TV, that has made this mystery man so popular with the YouTube generation. Have a wee ponder about that. Well, next up we have our interview with Enrico Roveto. Hi, I'm here with Enrico Roveto. How are you, Enrico?
Very well.
Back again.
No, you know, now we are testing the Barolo, so how I can say that I'm not good?
Okay, we're going to taste two Barolos and talk a wee bit about the region. Uh-huh. And because I noticed on the way in, it's very, very, very hilly, incredibly hilly. It's just up and down. How is the region formed?
It depends on which side of hills we are talking, because there are 7 small villages in the Barolo area where we can grow the Barolo, and they are divided in 2 different sides. The Barolo comes from Monforte and Serralunga, and the Barolo who comes from Barolo and La Morra, there are two different sides inside of the Barolo. But before to answer to your question, I would like just to tell you something about in general of the area, because otherwise you don't understand. All this area, all the Barolo areas, you can produce Barolo only in this limited area. So all the Nebbiolo grapes, which is planted, put in the ground in this specific area, can be called Barolo after 3 years of aging in the barrel.
Mm-hmm.
The difference, of course, from one village and to another village is huge difference. So that's also why the Barolo is a little bit more complicated than the other grape variety that we have. Because Nebbiolo grapes, first of all, Nebbiolo grapes, it come from a very small word in Italian, it's called nebbia, that it means fog.
Fog.
Fog, nebbia, like, you know,
yeah.
in the fall, in late fog, we have this kind of fog in around here. And that's because usually in the past, many years ago, when the weather was changed like now, Nebbiolo was picked during the foggy period season. That was November.
Okay.
Still to be now, November, this foggy period. But we picked before because the weather is a little bit warmer than before.
Yep.
So for the reason that it's come the name Nebbia. So this part. Nebbia is fog. So okay. Nebbiolo is come from originally from this word.
Okay, because Nebbiolo is quite a late ripening grape.
Is, let's say, tell you a curiosity, is the first one who bloom and the last one who is picked. So it's a very long vegetative cycle. And the Nebbiolo grapes doesn't like the fast maturation. The Nebbiolo likes long maturation.
Long cold or hot?
So cold, fresh, let's say. Because in September we have a good weather anyway, still to be a good. But maybe the night are quite cold, the day are fresh but sunny. That's the perfect weather for the Nebbiolo. Of course, like all the grape variety, they don't like so much rain. They don't like the rain in the last months before the harvest. But Nebbiolo is a little bit more less sensitive than the other grape variety. It's more strong. There is one substances on the skins of grape that is a little white. It's like a white dust. It's called pruina. I don't know the translation in English. And that is a natural preserve the grape from the disease, the sickness. Of course, it's not the disease are very strong. It's not useful. But you know, it's a natural protection.
Okay.
For the all the grape, they have that, but Nebbiolo is quite strong, and it's just a kind of white dust on that, and that's called pruina. You see also on the plums.
I don't know
when you have the plums.
Yeah, I've seen that.
And you can see it the same. It's called pruina because
I just
in Italian.
It was dust.
This is a natural protection. And Nebbiolo is quite strong. Also, the skins of grape is quite thick. You say
the skins are
thick. And why I speak about Nebbiolo on the skins of grapes? Because for us, the skins of grapes is everything.
Mm.
Because if you have a good skins of grapes, we can have a good wines. If we have a bad skins of grapes, we can have bad wines.
Normally, all the color and the tannins come from the skins.
All come from the skins. Inside, we have only water, sugar, and seeds. Seeds we don't want. Sugar, of course, is important. But, you know, it's a simple element. You know, if the weather is good and the selection was good made, you have a good percentage of sugar. But the skins is very important. Very important, because if from the skins we can extract the maceration. But now we are tasting the two different Barolos that come from my wineries, two different.
They're not as tannic as I'd normally associate with Barolo. Barolo is normally, I've been to tastings where you taste 20 Barolos and afterwards
I like your consideration. It's very important for me, because if I give to you to taste Barolo now, it means that the Barolo are ready to be drunk, or almost ready, because Barolo ready are difficult to find, but almost ready. This kind of Barolo that you are used to taste, I have, of course, but I will give you in 5 years' time when we'll be ready. Mm-hmm. And we have the Riserva Barolos, that is minimum 5 years of aging. The regular Barolo is 3 years of aging. So my philosophy is to try to make a Barolo and a wine that when I sell is more ready as possible. If I want and you want to have longer terms aging Barolos, I will age for you. I will not sell to you or give to you and say, wait for 20 years. You know, I will pay you in 20 years, you could say to me.
Yeah.
So this way of making a Barolo is not like people say that's, of course, it's a new way of making Barolo, it's more modern, but I don't like the word modern because sometimes there is a misunderstanding with over oaky wines. You don't feel so much the oak.
No, of course,
3 years of aging, how I can hide the oak. The oak is very important. But always have to be a well-balanced. It's like a ball. Have to be round. Everything have to be. Because otherwise, it's not pleasant, the wine.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, in a Dolcetto, in a Barbera, it's more easy. On the Barolo, it's more difficult. But, you know, we have also more time on the Barolo. And we have more tannins to think about. So that's, I think, is the secret is this one.
What happens to the wines as it ages over those 3 years?
What do you mean?
When you first put the wine into the barrel,
mm-hmm.
how does the taste change from when you first put it in to take it out 3 years?
The flavor, okay, the tannins are getting smoother.
Mm-hmm.
So the tannins are really having a small oxidation and they're getting smoother. The color is changing.
Is the tannins getting smoother because they're polymerizing, i.e. they're getting bigger, the chains, or is it because there's an oxygen, or both?
There is like oxygenation, so this chain, they are changing and they're getting smoother. And the color also is getting, you know, the color of Barolo is never have to be like, I don't know, to give you an idea, like the Cabernet Sauvignon. Never be. It's, you know, the color of Nebbiolo is similar to the color of the Pinot Noir.
Yeah, it's not as
because that's the genetic, you know, that's the characteristic of the grape. And the tannins change, the color change, and it's coming a little bit more orange. No, of course not too orange, otherwise it's totally oxidated, but a little bit more orange. And the flavor, I think, is most interesting thing is the flavor, is the bouquet. Because the bouquet of the evoluted Barolos really reminds you, maybe I cannot find the right word in English, but it's like the rose, flowers, rose, but over-matured flowers. You cannot say like that because you can use for the fruits. But when these flowers are not in the maximum of the evolution, but they are start to fade, this is the flavor of the Barolo aged.
A lot of people talk about Barolo tasting of rose petals and tar.
Exactly. Yeah. This is the characteristic of the Barolo when they age more than 5, 7, 8, 10 years. We have Barolos also. We just opened a Barolo for my birthday from 78. It's my birthday. My year is 78. And it was very good vintage. So for that reason, my father was bringing more bottles of 78. He took also some bottles of 79, who is my brother's age, but also if he's not good. But only for him. So we forgive him. So 78, and it was, of course, for me, was very, very interesting tasting. Because these Barolos are, I think the flavor is the most important thing. You see that the wines is completely changed, but it's not that. Of course, if we speak about wines from 70 years, probably are that, but...
How old can Barolos age?
I think that the Barolo that we do now, that we make now, I think, but that's only the time can answer me back. I think that our Barolos could have a better aging. I mean longer aging, but better aging. 20 years without problems. I think 20 years, there's no problems. I think the peak could be around after 10 years is a peak.
Well, that's not too bad. You can wait 10 years. A lot of the older Barolos, some of them tended to dry out before the tannins got under control. So
you have also to think that Barolos that my father was making is not the Barolo that I made. And so there is also a conflict sometimes between me and him. But that, I think, is normal between the two generations. Also because the knowledge is different. He doesn't have any fridge, for example. The control of the temperature, that for me is very important, is the control of the temperature. Couldn't, because there are no fridge at that time.
Yep.
Could put the wine outside, just outside, to hope that it's snowing or getting colder or warmer, but not always when you want to warm, it's warm outside, or when you want to cold, it's colder outside.
Yeah. So the temperature means what? You can give a longer maceration?
The temperature is important during all the process of wines. When you press the grapes, there is the macerations, so I need, for example, for the first 2 days, I want a higher temperature, and after I cool down. But this depends on the vintage also.
Mm-hmm.
Some vintage we need more cold immediately to preserve the fruit, and after have a warmer after. But usually... we have 30, 32 Celsius at the first day, and after we cool down at 28, 27.
What happens when you change the temperature during maceration?
Yeah, because in the first day, in the first 2 days of macerations, we have a great extraction of color.
Mm-hmm.
But when we have a high temperature, also in the other days, We have a high extraction of too much tannins, too much color, but not the good one, and we burn the flavor. So for the tradition, that the first day I want higher temperature, and after I cool down and control the temperature to 27 degrees until the end. That's very important. And the Barolo, for example, my father, when he makes the Barolo at the time, the maceration was very long, even 1 month maceration.
Yeah.
So you have an extraction, an over-extraction of tannins, even the bitter and not useful,
yep,
that you need 30 years to have the possibility to put in the mouth.
Yeah, sure.
So now we know the tannins, the good tannins, where they are extracted, more in the third, between the third and fifth day at that temperature. So we know more things. So in the seeds, the tannins of the seeds are the worst
stringent,
one.
Yeah.
We are taking out because they are falling in a particular tube down of our tank, and we take out.
Oh, okay. So if your tank's
also got... the way why you don't feel so much tannins is because you feel the tannins, of course, but they're very gentle. Because we have only the quality tannins.
Are your tanks different shape to remove seeds?
There are three tanks that we have.
Yeah.
They have a special part on the bottom with special, tube.
Special shape, yeah.
Shape in the bottom where after the pressing, when the fermentation start, the skins of grapes come up, uh-huh. The juice stay down, and the seeds are more heavy, so they fall down. Fall down, we just collect and...
Take them away. Yeah, okay. Because seeds can be very astringent, as you're saying.
Yeah, the worst one.
I've noticed the two Barolos that we've been trying.
There is the Barolo Giulin is the mixed vineyards.
Yeah,
and the Barolo Serralunga is the single vineyard.
You've got different shapes there. You've got your bottle shape. One's a Burgundy shape and one's a Bordeaux shape. Why have you gone for a different bottle shape?
That's a good question. That's something that I always thought. To have the Burgundy shape for the single vineyard, because I think the Burgundy shape, it represents more our tradition, our soil, and our terroir, and our story, because we always had pretty much influenced by the Burgundy and France, because Piemonte were under the French kingdom, and under the French influence for many years. For the Savoia, for example, the family, the king, they came from this side. So, originally, our bottles were all with Burgundy shape. After, we are Italians and very trendy, we like to change. but to give the difference between, to give more importance and priority to these wines who come from this single vineyard, I would like to give more power to this, to the shape of the bottle.
Normally, wines that don't chuck sediment are in a Burgundy bottle.
Yes.
And wines that chuck sediment are in a Bordeaux, yeah, because you can use the neck to catch the sediment when you're pouring it out. Do you not expect this wine to throw much sediment?
Usually, yes. Because this kind of, the single vineyard usually are more concentrated, or have more tannins, have more concentration of everything. And probably you don't know, but we don't stabilize the wines with the cold, with the Barolo. So
the cold stabilization. So do you get tartric crystals?
We don't do any cold stabilization for the Barolos. We do only for the Dolcetto. Okay. Also here, I'm not an extremist of the things, but if we have 3 years of times and we have a Barolo, it's accepted a little bit of deposit.
Yep.
On the Dolcetto that we sell the next year and could have a very big deposit, I don't like it. So we have to find a good compromise, I think.
I suppose people who are drinking Barolo and paying for it are normally, they're more savvy about wines, perhaps, and they don't mind a bit of tartrate crystal on them.
But I think that... that's the right way to work in the cellar is to touch as less as possible the wines. But there are some limits. For example, I heard about people who doesn't filter the wines. I think I'm a person who is, when it's possible, like doesn't to touch the wines with the filter or something. But
if the wine's been settling for ages, then
you don't know what can happen in between the bottling, between the machines and the barrel. That's something can go. You cannot check everything. A wide filtration, to be safe.
Okay, so you're not taking too much out of the wine.
No, but and also for the clarification, when we clarify the wines, we use the white of eggs. So the egg whites, we always do that in the past also. So these things we use for the past. The good traditional and intelligent way of working in the past, we keep it. Yep. It's three still to keep it.
I've noticed just tasting the two wines, they're quite similar when they're first poured because they're both open they're opening up more. But the single vineyard one has a more of a savory, earthy characteristic to it.
The area of production is quite similar, because also the Barolo Giulin, which is a mixed vineyards, the vineyards are coming anyway from this area, from the Serlungas area. But of course, the selection in the vineyard is different, and there we have different exposure. This Barolo Serlunga, that takes the name of the small village of Serlunga, and for us is very important, because the name of this village historically was famous for old aging potential high quality Barolos. Barolo from Serlunga and Monforte, they always had this very good characteristic of good potential of aging. And especially this one is an east exposure. So this Barolo always is very good when the vintage are very hot, because in the east exposure we take the sun from the morning, and the sun of the morning usually is not so hot like the sun from the evening, especially in this hotter season.
Yep.
And so we always, in the last 10 years, we had a very, very hot, in general, very hot season. So I think that preserves very good acidity, and the tannins are always very, very ripe. And in this Barolo Serlunga, the aging in the cellar, we had half in French oak barrel and half in big oak Slavonian barrel. And after we put together. For the Barolo Giulin, we have only the big oak Slavonian oak of 3,000 liters. And there's also a difference of the two tastes also for that. Not only for the single vineyard, not only for the exposure, but also from the type of oak that we used for the aging.
Mm-hmm. It's also slightly more punchy as well, the single vineyard. It's got a bit more intense.
That's more intensive. The single vineyards usually have more attention from our side. So we pay more attention, and we have, of course, better exposure, but also better selection in the vineyards, because the selection that we do in this period where we are in the end of July, beginning of August, is very important. So we're going to cut the 40-50% of the grapes, so the worst location on the grapes, so we cut that, and we can have a more concentrated and better wines in September, October, when we'll be picked.
What sort of cropping levels do you use for the Barolos?
Okay. It depends, of course, if we speak about single vineyards or if we speak about mixed vineyards. Let's say from 4,000 kilo per hectare until 6,000 kilo per hectare. That's more or less the average. You know, of course, if we speak about the older vineyards, like, for example, the Barbera that we tasted, we can also go lower in some vintage. The older grapevine, they have a different reaction. So they are always, the trend is to produce small quantity, but very high quality.
Okay. All right, I think we'll wrap it up there, Enrico. Thank you very much.
Thanks to you.
I hope you enjoyed the interview. We have one more interview with Enrico next week, where we're looking at Piemonte as a wine region. Now, one thing that Enrico said in the podcast, which I hadn't heard about before, was Pruina. Now, I had a look for this, and I had a terrible drive trying to track it down, but Pruina is an Italian word for a French word. The English translation is bloom. And bloom is a whitish covering of waxes which protect the plant from water loss. It's most noticeable on red grapes, although all grapes have it to some extent. In fact, all plants have it to some extent. Nebbiolo is the one that Enrico mentioned, and it's quite easy to be seen on that, along with easily to be seen on plums as well. In grapes, as well as the rest of the plant, bloom helps stop water loss and acts to stop spores from penetrating into the grape. Hence, as Enrico said, it helps protect the plant to some extent. Okay, almost finished for another week, but before we finish up, we have the results of our mystery person. This week it was Gary Vaynerchuk. The Wine Library TV was the big clue. So let me give you the clues again. Gary Vaynerchuk is a US wine merchant and video podcaster based in New York. Gary became famous for his gonzo-style wine reviews in Wine Library TV podcasts, and he was born in the USSR in 1975 in an area that's now called Belarus. He moved to the US when he was 3 and he admits he has no memories before coming to the USA. In March 2009, he signed a 10-book deal with Harper Studio for $1 million. And his first book is due to be released next month in October 2009, titled Crush It! Why Now is the Time to Cash In on Your Passion. Gary is an outspoken critic of wine scores, but in his own video podcast, he admits that it's a bit hypocritical as he rates wines out of 100. And it's his video podcast called Wine Library TV, also known as The Thunder Show, that has made Gary so popular with the YouTube generation. Okay, before we finish up though, we have a quote, this time from the Bible, Ecclesiastes 8:15. A man hath no better thing under the sun than to eat and drink and be merry. Nice one. Until next week, cheers and good drinking.
The UK Wine Show is a weekly podcast brought to you by 3050, the wine tasting company. The show is produced by Chris Scott and the news is read by Jane Scott. To listen to other shows, visit ukwineshow.co.uk. Thank you for listening.